Hi, welcome to the Meg Pearson Podcast, Fertile at 40. I'm your host, Meg Pearson. After many health complications due to alcohol addiction and an eating disorder that ruled my world for close to 20 years, I was told I would never have children. At 38, I naturally and surprisingly fell pregnant, and the transition from maiden to mother was wrought with love, grief, excitement, and healing. Becoming a mama was about far more than just soothing stitches and learning how to care for a tiny human. It was, and still is, a relearning of who I am and what I am truly capable of. After over two challenging years trying to conceive a second baby since, I gratefully and naturally conceived my second child just as I turned 41, after three losses and heaps of heartache. I am a doula in training, holistic chef, teacher of yoga, and a childbirth educator, and I am here to share my story because I know it's not just mine. Join me each week for unbiased convos with a no-bullshit approach to faith, infertility, conscious conception, and connected pregnancy, with birth stories, expert interviews, and personal anecdotes to help tell the story of creation. Welcome. Now let's do this. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Fertile at 40 podcast. I am your host, Meg Pearson. Today I'm excited to be continuing on in my real life birth story series with another amazing birthing person. This time I have an amazing guest named Tushita, and she is a first time mother based out of San Diego, California. We had such a pleasure speaking at the time of recording because on the day that we recorded this conversation, which was February 14th, Valentine's Day, we were actually celebrating 1 year since she and I first met here in Costa Rica. Such divinely timed synchronicities in this life. Now, Tushita is a certified Ayurvedic health counselor who had a birth plan that got turned on its head and is now using everything she experienced and learned as her curriculum for expanded healing and growth in her own personal revolutionary process. Today on the show, we talk about her fertility journey and how she used Ayurvedic practices and mother ayahuasca to help prepare herself to become a mother, as well as her birth experience and what she is offering to the world now as a new mom. Without further ado, we're going to get right into this conversation. Here is my chat with new mother Tushita and her birth story. One last thing before we get into the conversation, I want to remind you that this podcast provides general information and discussion about natural medicine, health, pregnancy, and childbirth related subjects. The content here should not be taken as medical advice, and the content here is for informational purposes only, and because each person is so unique, please consult with your healthcare professional for any medical questions. Now, on with the show. Welcome, welcome. I'm so excited to have you here, Tushita. Welcome to the Fertile at 40 podcast.
Hey, thank you, Meg. It's nice to be here. It's really, really nice to talk to you.
Yeah, well, I bet you it's really nice to just talk to someone right now in the current state of where you are in life, right? Constantly with a little baby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I found myself talking to someone the other day and I had continued on my baby sounds. I did not stop them. And somewhere along the conversation, within the first few seconds, I was like, oh, shit, I'm still not sounding like an adult. Like, let me switch up the tone and come back to like a regular octave, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So let's get right into it here. Where are you in the new mother journey? You are very fresh, yeah. Right?
Yeah. So I gave birth just 4 weeks ago on January 13th, he was born. His name is Rion. And the way that I would describe the last 31 days would one, the first thing that comes to mind is obviously sleep deprivation, because no matter how beautiful the journey is, the physical body does scream when it doesn't sleep. And so mine is definitely screaming like we haven't slept. But the moments of sleep just completely are forgotten when I look at his face, like when he's up and I'm up and we're looking at each other. And it's like, there is no body. There is no, the physical needs aren't there unless he's screaming because he's hungry. It's more like just a connection that transcends every lack that exists within our lives right now. So it's tired, but so amazing. So
yeah, so beautiful. Oh, I'm so excited. And I'm so impressed that you're able to make the time to have this conversation here today. So thank you. I appreciate that. I think it's a really beautiful opportunity
to hear from someone that is so, you know, fresh from the birth experience, so fresh from the fertility journey and pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And I hope that this conversation will be healthy and healing for you as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When I saw your post, I had actually already started telling my story to people that asked and didn't ask. So if they were like, congrats on your birth, I would go ahead and tell my story. Some of them would be like, I don't care. I actually had a few people that I typed paragraphs to. They just didn't respond. But a mother that mentored me throughout my pregnancy, she said, who's a naturopathic doctor, she said, tell your story as many times as you need to tell it in order for you to heal. Because even the woman that experienced...
Sorry. It's my sister's calling me. There we go. Okay.
Do you need to take that? Is that...
Nope. No. This is top priority, sister. Sorry about that.
I love how you said sorry again. It's like my Canadian heart was like bouncing as you said that. Sorry. So this doctor, she said, you know, you need to tell your story as many times as you need to tell it in order for you to heal, because birth is traumatic. And no matter how beautiful and perfectly planned your birth went, it's a traumatic experience nonetheless, right? Because it has, I mean, we define trauma as something that has a lasting effect on your physical, mental, and emotional well-being that carries into how you make decisions in the future, mm-hmm. and how you perceive life in the future. That's trauma, whether for good or for bad. So I just want to tell my story. And in hearing others' stories, which I was like a collector of stories before I gave birth, I was like, tell me your story. I found so much healing in hearing other people's stories, you know, whether it was good or bad, whatever that meant to them. So it's what you're doing is amazing. It's like very, very important.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm so grateful that you decided to have this conversation today, because every woman that I've been speaking to, the ones that have been already been on the show and ones that are lined up to be playing back very close in the future, you know, that's a common thing, you know, like we need to be able to voice this, because a lot of the time we are told really our story and our part, and it doesn't matter as long as we have the healthy baby. And that's like, gosh.
Yeah. The amount of times that I heard that after I gave birth, and my birth went nothing like I had planned it. I had spent months, like basically my entire pregnancy, preparing for, you know, the birth that my partner and I wanted. And we went to all sorts of classes to prepare for like a positive birth experience. We went to the Bradley method. I don't know if you've heard about mm-hmm. that. It's basically, you know, how your partner can coach you through a positive birth without medication. Took so much time to really understand how to train my body and my mind and my emotions and be present in that experience so that I don't need medication and I don't need medical intervention. So anyways, spent a ton of our energy really preparing for the birth that we wanted. And as part of that preparation, we hired a doula. And she was incredible. She really supported me a ton during my pregnancy. Anytime you would have, or I felt doubts or just a feeling of, oh my God, these people's stories are all so miserable. Everyone hates their birth experience. Like, how is mine ever going to be positive? She reassured me that, you know, there are positive birth experiences and I can have that.
Yeah.
Fast forward to December when birth was approaching and COVID had hit peaks and the hospitals in San Diego had said no doulas no additional people in the hospital other than one person that you're allowed to have, which obviously was going to be my partner. So a huge part of my prep had just completely sunk and I had to surrender to that. I mean, it is what it is, right? So I spent a few days just accepting that. And my birth, like the labor started.
Hey, before we get into the birth, because I want to honor that with all the space that it needs, but I would love to first hear.
Yeah.
And for anyone that is in the same boat about having, you know, the plans with the doula, you know, I did an episode a few episodes back about how the role of the doula has really had to change during this COVID time, you know, and I know that it's, It's a huge part of so many people's positive birth experiences to have that support. And I feel so deeply for you to have that advocate, that voice, that coach, you know, not be able to be there for you. I can only imagine. I can't wait to hear, you know, the rest of the birth story. But before we get into that, I would love to hear a little bit about your fertility journey. Yeah. You know, when you guys decided that you were, when it was time to start trying, and how that journey looked for you, and what you used to help support you in that, because I know that you had some really cool holistic practices included in that.
Yeah. So, I guess every woman's birth story or journey or fertility journey starts when she first starts to menstruate, right? So first period is truly when the journey starts. For me, that's when I consider the starting point. So I remember I was at Burger King with my friend in Toronto, and we were getting like the $2 Toonie Tuesday meal, and I got my period, but it was like very, very light. And I was like, is this my period? Is this not my period? And that defined how my menstrual cycle was throughout my adolescent and adult life. I was like, is it my period? Is it not my period? Is it coming? Is it not coming? Completely irregular, completely inconsistent. And I didn't really think it was a problem until I realized that this is actually not how others experience their menstrual cycles. Something's wrong with mine. So I went to a ton of gynecologists. My parents moved around a lot, so I saw a new OBGYN every time we moved around. And they all kind of said, you know, it's just your hormones. Your hormones are irregular. And that statement was always made to me as if that was just like saying the sky is blue. Your hormones are irregular. That's just, it is what it is. Everyone's hormones are irregular. And it culminated that, you know, that your hormones are irregular with the solution that you need to take birth control. So here I am, 15 years old, taking birth control because an OBGYN had prescribed it and said this was the only way that I was going to be able to regulate my hormones. My mom, my Indian mother, was just like, my 15-year-old daughter, you're telling her she needs to go on birth control? But I was just such a wreck because I had started reading at that point what it would mean to have irregular hormones and have irregular cycles when I try to have children. Right. And I've always wanted to be a mother. So, you know, I told my mom, I want to try anything to regulate my hormones. And, you know, sure enough, it worked. As long as I was on birth control, I was having a regular cycle. But the number of symptoms that came along with taking birth control starting at such a young age and so regularly for so long. I took it until I was 25 years old. Actually, until I was 27 years old. And that's a long time to just mask your hormones and what your body's naturally meant to do. Until I just realized I'm not supposed to feel these things. Like the symptoms that come alongside taking birth control, this is not normal. You know, this is not the way that my body's supposed to be functioning. And that awakening came to me a few months prior to me coming to Rythmia, where I was in Joshua Tree. This is such a crazy story, but I was in Joshua Tree, and it was the first time I saw the moon in a completely different light. No pun intended, but I saw the moon in a completely different light. And I was like, has that thing been there my whole life? Like, I never noticed her. Like, I didn't even know she was there. You know, I was all sun obsessed. And with that moment came this influx of other moments that taught me how connected we are to the cycles of the moon, how connected our reproductive cycles are to the cycles of the moon. I read this book a few days after that happened called Inner Engineering by Sadhguru. He's an Indian guru that talks about our bodies connecting with, you know, nature's rhythms and things like that. And he talked about that principle about how if women have this advantage, he calls it our privilege to be connected with the moon cycles that men don't have. And, you know, just other divine pieces of information about that connection came to me. And with that came the awakening that my body can do this. Mm-hmm. I just have to figure out how naturally. And that's when Ayurveda came into my life. It had always been in my life, you know, since I was young, because I was born where Ayurveda was born. My grandparents practiced it. My mom, my ancestors, there's a long lineage of Ayurveda being practiced in my family. But I had always ignored it and neglected, just like I had ignored and neglected the moon. You know, these things are around a lot of times that we just don't see it or don't have the value for it that these things deserve. And I was connected with an Ayurvedic doctor who's absolutely incredible, who basically treated me and guided me towards hormonal balance using flax seeds, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, which you're nodding because you probably know what I'm talking about.
Little seed cycling.
And I was like, this woman is crazy. Like, how does she expect these little seeds to help me at my balance, you know, my hormones get in balance? But that was one component of my getting back into balance. Other components included in Ayurveda, essentially the principle is to know your body in order to heal your body. Like, really listen to what your body's saying and really understand the elements of nature, herbs, spices, you know, the foods, the qualities of the foods, the qualities of yourself. If you're hot, take a cool herb. You know, if you're feeling dry, you need to eat moist foods. It's always healing with opposites, your qualities and nature's qualities. So my body had developed a lot. It's hard to explain this, but my body had developed a lot of dryness, especially in my reproductive system and in my digestive system. So that resulted in the flow of my menstruation not being regular. That was like the Ayurvedic diagnosis of what was going on to me. And that dryness occurred due to, again, if the medical explanation for this from an Ayurvedic perspective would take me the whole 30 minutes to explain. So I'll just, if you people want to Google it, go ahead. But the notion is that the dryness in the body, that quality came from the trauma that I had endured as a child, which really hurt my nervous system. So think about it almost as if a desert or just like California, when it doesn't get water, it dries up and the flow of things stops. Things stop growing. Yeah. Things, you know, there's no precipitation, like things dry up, they shrivel, they stop functioning the way that they're supposed to without rain. So essentially, that trauma had created that effect. And what I needed to do was to bring moisture into my digestive system, to my reproductive system. So I took certain herbs that allowed that moisture to come in. I ate foods that were really rich in ghee and, you know, really rich in just moist and dense qualities that allowed my tissues and my nervous system to become nourished and heal. Lots of fat, because fat helps really nourish you from the inside out, right? And that helped me regain some of those qualities that would allow my menstrual cycle to just flow more. Yeah.
So beautiful.
So cool, right? So cool. And now when people tell me they're taking birth control, I respect that decision, but I always ask, like, is it a choice or is it a compulsion?
Yeah.
Because for me, it was a compulsion, and it was that compulsion came from, I don't have another choice. Another choice is this, but the reality is that the choices are all around us in nature. We just have to take the time to, one, understand ourselves, what's really going on in our bodies. Like, what's the root of the problem?
Ask the questions, you know?
Ask the questions. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. 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 So my body was starting to heal, but my spirit needed some work, you know, like as my physical body was healing, there was still a lot that had been suppressed in my spirit. And it's so cool. Like when I say this out loud, I get goosebumps because I myself can't believe like the shit unfolded the way that it did, all in the span of like a year and a half. When I came to Rhythmia, on the first night that I took the medicine,
which, by the way, for anyone that's listening, isn't familiar, Rhythmia is a life advancement center in Guanacaste, Costa Rica, where they offer plant medicine ceremonies, breath work, colon cleanses, you name it. Just for anyone that is listening that's not familiar, go ahead.
It's like the spiritual Hogwarts. It's a magical place. So the first night that I drank the medicine, the only thing that I felt was this overwhelming bloated feeling in my stomach, almost as if all the trauma that I had stored in my gut was ballooning up. And I remember this so clearly because I decided to wear really tight leggings on the first night. You know, it's the first night. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know you're supposed to wear loose, flowy clothes, even though they told me I'm supposed to. I was like, I'm wearing my high-waisted leggings, you know? And so that compressed that even more. And I spent the entire night feeling so miserable. The only thing I could focus on was that like feeling in my stomach. And I had carried that feeling around, not to the extent that I felt it when I was on the medicine, but I carried that feeling around my whole life because there was so much trauma stored in my stomach, in my reproductive system, in my gut. So I remember asking one of the shamans there, I said, can I just take my pants off? Cause I'm so comfortable. She's like, you can do whatever the hell you want. You know, just try to get your mind off that. I couldn't though. And then the next night, it was beautiful how that followed the first night and the feeling. One of the shamans there, he told me, you know, before I went to take the second drink of medicine, I was like, I'm not doing it. And I had shared with him all my fears of not being able to get pregnant, all my fears of, you know, just holding this emotion in my gut. And I was like, I can really feel it more than I've ever felt in my life before. And I don't think I'm going to be able to let this go. I think I'm going to have to live with this forever. And I know if I don't let this go, it's going to really harm my fertility journey. And so he reminded me as I'm like, you know, on the floor, all fours in front of the bucket, he was like, think about how badly, you know, you want to bring life into this world and you have to heal in order to do that. And I was like, fuck, okay, fine. I'll go get the, Sarah's like, the second drink is, you know, come get your second drink. And I was like, fine. So I walked up there. I knew I was going to throw up immediately after I took it. And I took it. And what happened was so cool. Like I went into myself in my mother's womb. I was like sobbing uncontrollably after I took the second drink of medicine, and I could feel myself like rubbing my stomach and healing myself in my mother's womb when I was a baby. I could feel that. I didn't see anything, but I knew that that's what was going on. And as I was rubbing my stomach, it was almost as if I was like comforting that trauma that I had endured and just rubbing it as a mother would rub the wounds of her own child. And I puked like I've never puked in my freaking life before. And that feeling never came back. Like that feel, I carried an 8.5-pound baby and my stomach has never felt, you know, that heaviness never came back.
Wow.
Yeah.
So powerful. So beautiful.
Right? Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, so then what happened after that?
So I have to put in the disclaimer that at this point we were not trying to get pregnant. Like when I came back from Rhythmia, I had just started a business, you know, from this merged place that we talk about at Rhythmia, where your soul merges with your current identity. And I realized on my fourth night when I connected with my ancestors on Yahe night, my ancestors were like, listen, you need to do this Ayurveda thing. You need to carry our tradition into the West and share it with people as best as you can. So I came back, I was like full swing, started this business, hard working at it. And it was not the right time, right? Funny, that never exists. But the universe had other plans and, you know, I wanted it at some point, but not in that moment. And I actually found out I was pregnant one day after I had a reunion with some folks from Rhythmia.
Amazing.
Amazing, right? And one of the women that I was with, she was like, she just randomly said, like, you might be pregnant. And I was like, you're crazy. You know, that can't happen for me. Like, that's not possible. And I was like, was she right? And I took a test the next day and it turns out that, you know, ta-da, pregnant.
Soul sister could tell. She could feel the vibes.
Oh, right, right. And the first thing I thought about, I mean, I had many thoughts, but was like, the amount of doctors that told me this wouldn't be possible for me without IVF or without continued hormone therapy or without continuing to take birth control until I was ready to get pregnant, in spite of how shitty it was making me feel, without offering any other real solution, I was like, ha ha, you know, I did it, you know, and it was beautiful. It really, really reaffirmed my faith in just how powerful our bodies are and how intervention is only necessary in certain moments. It's not the norm, it's the exception.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And medical intervention, because natural intervention is something that we get to choose to do through our lifestyle changes and our faith and our belief system and connecting to nature, like all of those things that you spoke about. And I know anyone that's been listening to my story here, they know that I was of the same, like told I was on the pill from 15 because I had back acne and I had an eating disorder where I had lost my period. I went off the pill at 30. I was on it from 15 till 30.
Yeah.
Did not even get my moon cycle back until I was 35 years old. Yeah. Oh. And between all that time, I had polycystic ovaries. I had 30 cysts. I had all of this stuff. And I did nothing but change my diet and follow my intuition in order to be where we are today. And I used some Ayurveda practices. I did some Chinese medicine and, you know, those were my interventions, which were super beneficial with zero negative side effects. Right.
So right. Exactly. Exactly.
So beautiful. So I love that you shared that. Now I would love to get back to.
Yeah.
The big day or days for some people, the birth story. So let's talk about that. So you had your child in January, your little one. And mm-hmm. let's talk about what your birth plan was, and then we'll talk about how your birth played out.
Yeah. Yeah. So as I mentioned, my birth plan was to have an unmedicated, as natural as possible, really leaning towards birthing at home. But because it was my first, I was not at that point mentally to birth at home. So I decided to do it at a hospital, but I wanted to just no medical intervention unless necessary. That was essentially my birth plan in capital letters. And things were going really well. Actually, I started laboring at home. Just like most women can relate to this. You're not sure if it's labor or not. You're like, is it? Cause you go through so many pains and changes throughout, especially the last couple of weeks. So I sent my doula a text at 3 a.m. and I asked her whether this was labor. And she said, it might be, it might not be, just keep breathing through it. And so that's what I did until it was staring me right in the face. And it was like, this is labor. The contractions were closer together, a few minutes apart. And so at that point she came over and she was helping me get through them at our house. And
how far along were you at this point?
So I was 38 weeks.
Okay. So you were super early.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So not fully quite there, but I had a big baby. Well, big according to the doctors. He ended up being a normal size, ended up being like 8.5 pounds. But yeah, every time I would get an ultrasound, they would be like, your baby is massive.
They never know. This is the thing. They think they know, but they never, ever really
know. Right. Exactly. So, exactly.
The amount of women I've talked to that are like, the doctors told me I had a 10 pounder and then they made me do a C-section and she came out 6.5 pounds. You know, it's like,
actually switched doctors and nobody does this. I switched doctors at 32 weeks because my previous doctor kept like scaring me with the C-section. He was like, you have a big baby and we're going to have to start talking about a C-section. And he started that conversation at 20 weeks, jeez, which the size is completely, you know, it's so early. So I switched doctors because I was like, this guy, you know, really, whatever. So, so 38 weeks going through labor and, we noticed that my labor was all in my back. It was nothing in my abdomen, which I was like, this is really weird. And my doula mentioned that that's because the baby was sunny side up, you know, that the chances are the baby's sunny side up. That's why my labor was in my back. And she looked at me and she said, I know that you don't want to do this with an epidural, but back labor is so torturous that I would not. She almost like whispered it to me. She's like, if you need it, you can get, like, you know, giving me the permission that this is going to be hell. And this was feeling like hell. So if you need it, take it, but remember that you don't want it, you know, but you can do it if you want or whatever. So, at that point I had started bleeding a little bit and I sent a photo to my doctor and said, is this bleeding normal? And the nurse said, just go to the hospital because, you know, better safe than sorry. So I went into the hospital, still pretty early at this point, about 3 centimeters or so. And from 3 onwards up until 7, the journey was rapid and I did it without medication. And it felt exactly like I felt when I was in ceremony, like to a T. It was so interesting because it was the same feeling of remembering the tools that you had learned, which is breathing and knowing that this isn't going to last forever and knowing that there's really pure bliss on the other side and so on. And second, you know, just all the bodily fluids, like
totally
in ceremony. And I had a ton of beautiful moments during that time. When I got in the shower is like a natural epidural, by the way, it's amazing. Because my labor was in my lower back, when the hot water hit my lower back, it was like, I didn't even feel my contractions. Mm. But because I was at a hospital, they had to do monitoring and they had to have me hooked up to the IVs and they had to have me actually taking antibiotics because I had the group B strep thing that you can, you know, test positive for,
right.
Which I did, which is like this harmless bacteria that can only affect you during pregnancy, the strain. So I couldn't stay in the shower for a long time because they had to keep asking me to come back to the bed to hook me up again. So when I was in the shower, I had transcended. Like I really felt like I left my body. And there's this beautiful thing that I read before I went into labor, which said, during labor, the mom and the baby, they go to heaven to pick up the souls and return back to earth. And so that's what I kept envisioning in my mind. I was like, I'm just taking a little journey to heaven, you know, grabbing the soul, coming back down, you know, that's what I'm doing. That's what this pain is for. But every time I would leave the shower, I would be reminded of the environment that I was in with all these wires and all these, you know, nurses and doctors, five nurses interchanging between shifts, like just people coming and going. It was really chaotic outside of the shower. So coming back out, when I was at about 8.5 centimeters, I couldn't go in the shower anymore because they thought, well, the stage to push is imminent, so you should be on your bed.
And so how long of a time do you recall from when you got to the hospital till you were this far along? Do you know?
That was, let's see, I got there at 3 p.m. and my birth culminated at about 11 a.m. So how many hours?
Okay.
What's that?
3 to 11 is about 8 hours. Yeah.
The next day though, 3 p.m., 12, 13.
Oh, so 3 to 3 would be 24 plus 8, 32.
Yeah. My entire labor was 32 hours.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The hospital was about, the time at the hospital was about 15, 16 hours though.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And what happened was, even though the first part was, it went really smoothly, went, you know, no medication, kept going. When I got to 8.5 and I wasn't able to take my natural epidural, which was being in the shower, I didn't have my doula there, and it was just me and my partner who was very sick at the time. And like, just like, you know, wrench after wrench thrown into my plans. So whenever he would go to the bathroom and there would be no nurse there, I had no one to help me get through my contraction. And that was repeating too close together because the contractions get closer together.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck it. I need the epidural. I can't do this anymore. And this was the moment in which the doula becomes such an important part of the journey because your partner can't watch you go through that pain. It's really hard to watch someone go through that pain, especially if it's your first time doing it together. So the doula, that's her job, right? This is what she does. And I didn't have her by my side to remind me that I can do this without medication, I just had forgotten my strength. And that moment that marked me forgetting my strength led to more and more and more moments of me forgetting my strength. Mm. Because once you forget it once, it's an overwhelming feeling that piles on top of one. I mean, that's what happens in life too. When you forget your strength, you keep forgetting, right? Until someone reminds you how strong you are. So when I took the epidural, which was a really hard decision for me because I really did not want to do that. That led to me not being able to be mobile, which was a huge reason I didn't want to take it, because when the baby's in this sunny side up type positions, movement helps to flip them around and get them in the ideal position. I wasn't able to do that. You know, with the taking of one medication comes more medications. So after the epidural came the Pitocin and, you know, came the more the things hooked up to me, me not being able to, even if I had to flip from one side of the bed to another, I had to call the nurse to help me like move all the wires to help me move. Yeah. So at that point, I just kind of felt like a prisoner on that bed and I was like stuck. I felt stuck. And now I don't know if the epidural stalled the labor or helped it move an additional 1 centimeter, which I got to 9.5, took hours. Who's to say if it helped or stalled it, but once I got there, it was stuck. Like it was stuck there for 8 hours.
Wow.
Just, yeah. 9.5. Just, I was like, it's like, what is going on? You know? And the midwife, she could feel the baby's head, but because I had not dilated all the way to 10, they would not allow me to push. So this is the most bizarre part that I don't understand. And I would love for someone to help me understand this, which is I felt an overwhelming urge to push. I was like, I need to push. This is what my body is telling me. And I need to listen to my body. Like I need to push right now. I need to push the baby out. And the nurse who had, you know, the fifth nurse switch, she had come in all hot and ready in the morning. And she was like, no, honey, you can't push. You're not at 10. You're not at 10 centimeters. You're at 9.5. And so we can't let you push. Do you want more epidural? And I actually didn't say yes, but I didn't say no. I was so out of it. I didn't say no. I got more epidural anyways. So, you know, when you get more epidural, you start feeling things less. So the urge to push was there, but I didn't feel it anymore. The urge came back a little while later and I was told not to push because I was not at 10 centimeters. And although I was given a bunch of rational reasons for why, things like your cervix might hemorrhage because it's not at 10. If you push prematurely, you could harm the baby's head. All these things that made sense to me. But like I said, you know, listening to your body is the most important thing that you can do in your life, especially during birth. And that was the moment that I stopped listening to my body entirely. It went on low volume when I took the epidural, but I had muted it entirely when I made that decision not to push in that moment. And that is, I wouldn't call it a regret because yes, my baby and I are healthy, but it's a moment that I'll think about forever. Like what if I had just pushed? Mm-hmm. And because I didn't, I was rolled into my VIP C-section 8 hours later because they wouldn't let me go any longer. And this notion of the doctors won't let you do something is very strange because you own the outcomes of your birth. Nobody else but you. So,
well, yeah. And I think that this is a really interesting point, like 9.5 to 10 centimeters. It's not like they have a ruler that they're putting inside of you. And this is people using their fingers and making their very best guesstimate. So what's a half a centimeter?
When I need to push, you know,
it seems very, you know, and I mean, I know I'm very newly trained in this birth working world, but I've spoken to a lot of professionals that have been doing this for a long time. And they obviously see both sides of it, right? Like we want to protect the health of the mother and the baby, but at the same time, when we're looking 9.5 to 10 centimeters there, this is such a, it's perspective, right? It all depends on the person that's doing that checking. And so, yeah, I feel like this is a common thing that we hear, that women do feel like their power is definitely taken away in these instances, which is, it's heartbreaking when our intuition and our body is telling us that we're supposed to be doing a certain thing a certain way. And then we get essentially hushed. You know,
got hushed. And when I went into the C-section, it was a really strange experience. And that was super traumatizing because you're awake during it. So not only can you hear what's going on, you can smell what's going on. You can smell your body being cut open. You can hear the conversations that the pack of nurses and doctors, with all beautiful intentions to help me, are having. And they were talking about their weekend as they were cutting me open. And as I was sobbing, and I remember my hands were numb and I was screaming. I was like, why are my hands numb? Because you're only supposed to be numb from a certain waist down part of your body. Right. So no one answered me because they couldn't hear me because they were talking, because this was such a regular thing for them, even though it was for me, one of the most monumental moments of my life. Now, when I saw him, it all just evaporated for a bit, but it's something that I'm still healing from. And it's something that I think I will continue to heal from until I realize what lessons I needed to learn from that, you know, which I haven't quite pinned down yet. My spiritual teacher, Ram Dass, he says, everything in your life that happens is your curriculum. It's your school, right? Sit down, take notes. You're in school. So I don't know why I was enrolled in this class yet. I'll figure it out as life unfolds. But the emotional scarring of a C-section is really something that I didn't understand.
Well, yeah. And I think an emergency C-section at that, you know, I think is even next level to, you know, obviously there's not a lot of people that are able to do an elective C-section. It's typically, you know, medical reasons or emergency, but the point that you made that this is a super routine and normal thing for all of those birth workers and the medical practitioners. But for someone who has never had surgery, this is major abdominal surgery. For someone who has been in labor for 30 plus hours, you know, with the biggest hope to be doing this naturally to then be forced into this type of situation, there needs to be the meeting place between the two. And I think that is definitely something that is missing in the medical world. I know that there are hospitals that are doing really beautiful, humane, you know, conscious C-sections.
Yeah.
And the people that are present in that room need to be, you know, mindful and respectful of the people.
Respectful. Yeah. Yeah. Well, what was interesting about my situation is that after the 8 hours had passed, they actually asked me, they were like, do you want to get a C-section or do you want to keep going? But it wasn't really a choice as much as they made it feel like it was a choice through that question, because that question was followed with, well, if you don't get a C-section, here's the long list of things that could happen to you. And then I asked my doula after about that list of things. And she said that rarely ever happens to anybody. And a 30-hour labor is pretty normal for a first-time mother, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is, it's so normal. Like so many friends, women that I've talked to for this podcast, 30, 36, 48. I talked to a woman whose labor was 52 hours with her first, you know, I just spoke to a woman day before yesterday who her first labor was like 6 hours. Her second labor was like 28. So long, lengthy labors are normal. And I also want to just touch on what you said, that you have you know that you're going to be healing from this for a long time. You haven't quite figured out what lessons you need to learn. And I need to just tell you, sister, give yourself lots of time, because I am 2.5 years postpartum from my first birth, and I'm just finally starting to figure it out. So,
what were some of the lessons you feel you learned or a reflection that you had?
Well, it's been it's been my birth experience. I did not, I'm going to be doing a whole podcast on this as well coming up, but what happened to me was a lot of loss of control, I felt. And I didn't realize how much I didn't realize I lost control of the situation, which is the same. And it has brought up all the same feelings that have been brought up to me through the years as I've been dealing with my sexual molestation and all of my sexual trauma. So this birth of my first daughter pulled all of that up for me again, because I really hadn't healed it in the way that I needed to heal it. So having my male doctor force me through every intervention imaginable, you know, really just, you know, has brought all of that back up for me. So I'm doing like the next stage in healing all of that from that birth, but also from everything that's happened to me in the 20, 30 years prior to that have all come up for me to look in the face and prepare for this next birth in July, where I'm having my next baby, to flip that, the dialogue, flip the script, so that this next birth can be my empowering birth that it needs to be in order for me to take the power back. And so this pregnancy is my period of study. How can I best heal, and how can I prepare and be, you know, studied up for this next birth? And that doesn't mean that I'm going to only feel empowered if I have a natural water birth, like I wanted with my first. I can have an empowered C-section if I need to have an empowered C-section.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you said that. Yeah. Period. Yeah. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. So I think that this is, birth is a crazy thing where there is a lot that's under our control. And really there at the end of the day, there's a lot that's out of our control. Okay. And the best we can do is prepare ourselves with our birth plan or birth intentions, I rather have, you know, decided to call it. Mm-hmm. And also just prepare ourselves for the unexpected and be strong and coming at it from a healed place. Absolutely. so that if something does not go according to plan, that we can better deal with it than if we didn't come with a studied up.
Yep. I once asked one of my healers what surrender means. I said, is surrender the same as apathy? Because they sometimes feel the same to me, just not giving a shit. And he said, think of surrender as that, I don't know what this yoga pose is called, the warrior, right? Mm-hmm. Feet planted on the ground, but your arms go up. And he said, your feet are planted on the ground. You're in full effort. You know, you're really rooted, but then you put your hands up in the air and you go, well, let life do what it needs to do.
Yeah. Like
it's a playing of the two. It's being rooted and really studying, being strong, but at the same time having no attachments. And so yeah, that's what you're doing. And that's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, thank you, sister. I'm so grateful for you sharing this beautiful story, exploring a little bit of your journey with Ayurveda and plant medicine. Ayahuasca is the name of the plant medicine. If we didn't mention it already, I don't think we did. And your birth story, amazing and so, so, so beautiful that you are now able to look back and start to think, okay, what can I learn from this? Because I think this is, you know, it's the only way we can look at things in life, especially when they don't tend to go in the direction we want them to.
Yeah. It's the curriculum. It's the core.
It is. So let me just ask you, anyone that would like to connect with you, maybe they want to hear more about your story, because as you said, sharing is healing, but especially if people want to learn a little bit more about your Ayurveda work, because I know you are a certified Ayurveda health counselor. I'm having trouble speaking. Yeah. Where can people connect with you if they want to learn a bit more about that and or to just follow up and reach out? What are the best modes?
Yeah. So my Instagram handle is @moon.spice. And I share there the herbs, the spices, just the rituals that help me stay rooted in nature and help me heal my body and my healing journey. I'll be sharing a lot of the postpartum stuff and prenatal stuff that I've been doing with herbs and with spices and just with foods in general that have helped me just stay nourished and stay sane. So that's where people can find me.
Amazing. Well, thanks again so much. I'm sure you have lots to get back to. Most importantly, a handsome little man. So we'll call it quits for now.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It was so nice talking to you. Thank you so much.
You too, sister. Thank you.
Bye.
Hi, welcome to the Meg Pearson podcast, Fertile at 40. I'm your host, Meg Pearson. After many health complications due to alcohol addiction and an eating disorder that ruled my world for close to 20 years, I was told I would never have children. At 38, I naturally and surprisingly fell pregnant, and the transition from maiden to mother was wrought with love, grief, excitement, and healing. Becoming a mama was about far more than just soothing stitches and learning how to care for a tiny human. It was, and still is, a relearning of who I am and what I am truly capable of. After over 2 challenging years trying to conceive a second baby since, I gratefully and naturally conceived my second child just as I turned 41, after 3 losses and heaps of heartache. I am a doula in training, holistic chef, teacher of yoga, and a childbirth educator, and I am here to share my story because I know it's not just mine. Join me each week for unbiased convos with a no-bullshit approach to faith, infertility, conscious conception, and connected pregnancy, with birth stories, expert interviews, and personal anecdotes to help tell the story of creation. Welcome. Now let's do this.